Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. After 3 days of fighting in South Yemen, the situation there remains confused. There is one report this morning that the Marxist government has crushed a coup attempt by more radical Marxist forces, but Derek Blakely, who's following the crisis from nearby Djibouti, says reports reaching there indicate the fighting goes on and that the country's president is now dead.
According to diplomatic sources, South Yemen's President Ali Nasser Mohammed has died, the result of wounds suffered Monday during fierce fighting in the capital city of Aden. But this cannot be confirmed because communications with the outside world are still severed, and the outcome of the attempted coup remains unclear. Reports reaching Djibouti tell of continued battles between troops loyal to President Mohammed and rebel forces seeking to institute a still more radical regime. Both factions fighting in South Yemen are pro-Soviet Marxists, but the rebels apparently object to recent moves by the government to soften its hardline rhetoric while making friendly gestures towards the West. South Yemen is the only Marxist government in the Arab world, and it's considered vitally important because it controls the southern entrance to the Red Sea. There is no indication whether the 1,000 Soviet troops stationed there have taken part in the fighting. The heaviest combat so far was reported near the airport and around the harbor, where land-based troops exchanged fire with gunboats. Meanwhile, the airport remains closed, telephone lines are out, and the country's borders have been sealed off. Derek Blakely, CBS News, Djibouti.
Libya's official news agency says Colonel Gaddafi has asked North Yemen for permission to land Libyan troops there on their way to duty in South Yemen as a so-called Arab peacekeeping force. No word on whether that permission was granted or whether Gaddafi actually intends to intervene. Lately, he's been preoccupied with his showdown with Washington. And now, as Chris Kelly tells us, the U.S. is beefing up its naval presence in the area.
Pentagon sources say a second U.S. aircraft carrier, the Saratoga, is entering the Mediterranean today because of heightened tensions with Libya. That has been underscored by an incident Monday when sources say a U.S. Navy plane was shadowing a Soviet reconnaissance craft 140 miles off Libya's coast. Sources say a pair of intercepting Libyan MiGs flew within 200 feet of the Navy plane. But Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger said the incident was not unusual.
The United States intelligence reconnaissance plane was doing what our planes always do when there are any of our ships in the vicinity. They provide a longer set of eyes than you can get on the ship. This is a little farther north than they've been before, but I don't think there's anything unusual about it.
The Libyan jets were gone by the time two U.S. fighters rushed to the area. U.S. officials believe the Libyan interception was pulled off by intelligence from the Russians, who have a warship in Tripoli's harbor. Chris Kelly, CBS News, Washington.
There were unusual military movements today around government offices in Lesotho, a mountain kingdom surrounded on all sides by South Africa, leading to speculation about a possible coup there. Dennis Smedley, Britain's deputy high commissioner in Lesotho's capital, Maseru, said after civil servants were ordered out of their offices, some soldiers met with the prime minister and then went back to their barracks.
The troops have withdrawn. Business in Maseru seems to be going on as normal. And, the event, whatever it was and whatever its implications, now seems to be over.
Correspondent Alan Pizzi is also in Lesotho and says today's strange episode may be tied to the two-week blockade by South Africa and the resulting shortages of food and fuel.
The government has been reduced to cutting down on the number of vehicles they use, and several garages have been closed already because they don't have any gasoline. People are walking rather than driving. They're running out of frozen goods, and meat and fresh vegetables are very, very hard to find. Yesterday, the border police on the Lesotho side told us that no large trucks carrying any perishable commodities had come through. We crossed to the South African side and found dozens and dozens of trucks lined up. Some of the men driving them said they'd been there for as long as 3 days.
Alan Pizzi reporting from Lesotho. Senator Edward Kennedy is in for a frosty reception when he arrives in Chile today. Supporters of the military government plan to demonstrate, some of them carrying life preservers with the word Chappaquiddick on them. Lebanon's three-week-old peace agreement appeared to totally collapse today as fighting continued in Beirut between rival Christian factions. The one Christian militia leader who did support the Syrian brokered armistice, Eli Hobeika of the Lebanese forces, has now reportedly surrendered to forces loyal to President Jamal. Hobeika is said to have decided to give up after the defection of his chief of staff, Samir Gaja, who, like Jamal, also opposed the Damascus agreement. Soviet Foreign Minister Edvard Shevardnadze arrived in Tokyo today in search of closer relations. In one of his first meetings, he reportedly cautioned Japanese officials not to join in President Reagan's Star Wars research program. Wyatt Andrews has more.
Shevardnadze was welcomed to the Soviet embassy in Tokyo by a cluster of anti-Soviet demonstrators. They shouted slogans from trucks which carried huge loudspeakers. Out of concern for security, 6,000 Japanese police have been mobilized to prevent attacks and to keep right-wing protesters at least two blocks away from Shevardnadze at all times. It is the first Tokyo meeting of the Japanese and Soviet foreign ministers in 10 years. Put simply, the Russians are not popular in Japan. But the Soviets under Mikhail Gorbachev have decided to be more aggressive about friendly relations in the Pacific, and they badly need the kind of Japanese high technology that will improve the quality of Soviet consumer goods. What the Japanese want, meanwhile, is for the Soviets to give back to Japan four small islands the Soviets have occupied since the end of World War II. Wyatt Andrews, CBS News, Tokyo.
Before President Reagan starts his weekend, his doctors want to check for any recurrence of cancer. Gary Schuster reports.
President Reagan returns to Bethesda Naval Hospital Friday for extensive tests as a follow-up to his colon cancer surgery last summer. Mr. Reagan will travel to the Naval Medical Center where he will undergo a colonoscopy, chest x-rays, and blood tests. White House spokesman Larry Speke said the president may spend the night at the Navy Hospital. Mr. Reagan has undergone periodic checkups since his surgery, but doctors recommend that about every 6 months, patients who have had colon cancer should have a colonoscopy to examine the colon for any evidence of tumor reoccurrence. Gary Schuster, CBS News, the White House.
Budget experts for both the administration and Congress today report preliminary figures that under the new Graham-Rudman balanced budget law could require nearly $12 billion in across-the-board spending cuts that would affect virtually all government programs from Amtrak to the National Zoo. A new survey by the U.S. League of Savings Institutions shows San Francisco is still the costliest place to buy a house. The median price there, $152,000, twice the national average. Los Angeles was fourth on the list after New York City and Boston. The cheapest housing is in the Midwest. The dollar was mixed today, and gold prices hit their highest level in 14 months. The London gold fix, $345.30, up nearly $5 from yesterday's close. Prices are higher on the New York Stock Exchange in active early trading, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average ahead about a third of a point in the first half hour of trading. Our time now coming up on 710.